Mom's Worst Day podcast is an avenue for mothers to share their stories, things that did not go quite as planned, and interesting trials that come with motherhood. The podcast aims to encourage and uplift women, ease the burden of their ever-present mom guilt, and to let them know that they are not alone. I'm your host, Nicole Chikwe, and welcome to Mom's Worst Day. You've got this, mama. Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mom's Worst Day. Today's guest is the beautiful, incredible mama, Datari Ladde. So usually I kind of do like an introduction, but I want you to introduce yourself. But anyway, this is Datari Ladejo.
Hi.
Hello, Datari. Please introduce yourself and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm really honored to be here. I don't even know where to start with my introductions, but as you mentioned, my name is Datari. I am a first-time mom, resident here in Lagos. I'm a lawyer, content creator, all kinds of things, and a digital strategist. And I love to share about motherhood and my journey through motherhood and marriage. And, you know, that's what I do at the moment.
Amazing. Thank you. So Datari has the most incredible journey so far. I feel like even though you've only been a mom for, Tiara's a year old.
Yeah, she's a year.
I mean, and you've been pregnant for, you were pregnant the year before. So, but I feel like you've had like an intense 2 years.
Yeah.
Which is why I was so keen to have you on the podcast. But thank you so much for joining us. First of all, like for people who don't see the clip, Data is looking, hey, I don't even know what's happening. The hair is laid, the lashes are fluttering,
thank you. The nails
are on fleek, the whole works. I love to see it. Like, I'm just here, like, wow.
I really need to. Because I am preparing for a girls' trip, my first girls' trip without my baby, so I'm just going for the full works here.
Please, round of applause for Datari as she embarks on this. It's a milestone, right, to be able to go on a trip without your child. Why is this happening now? Like, why was this important for you to go on this trip?
Now, yeah. Okay. So first of all, I have to say it was such a hard decision for me. I had to literally ask so many people, like, do you think I'm doing the right thing? Because I went on like these online chat rooms and I saw people like, oh, I left my baby for 3 days. And other people like, well, if you can do that, you know, good for you. But I could never do that. Yeah, it's crazy. So I felt like the worst mom ever until I spoke to one of my friends who has 2 kids, and she was just like, girl, go, you know, just have time to be yourself, you know, and remember who you were before you were a mom. So for me, it's really important because I had my baby during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I literally had no break. And I was in America at the time, so we were not going outside at all because it was really crazy there. CNN was just like scaring everybody. So, you know, we're at home. And pretty much since then, I've just been like a hermit. Like, I'm always at home with my baby. And right now, I just feel like I'm at a place where I kind of want to remember who I was. Everything about me at a certain point was very mommy, mommy. Like, I was consumed with motherhood. And I think that I will be a better mother and a better wife if I just take this trip, do my thing, have fun, get it out of my system, and then come back to, you know, everything. So that's why I'm doing it now.
And the church says amen.
Hey, hey.
Amen.
Pass the offering
basket.
Listen,
like, amen. I love to hear it because, and I'm so happy that you have also come to that realization quite early in your motherhood journey. So for me, it took me a while. I was super consumed for so long. And I shared this a number of times on my platforms and on the podcast about how I felt like I was... I wanted to be the best mom I could be, right? And that's what everyone wants to do. And so I equated motherhood with suffering. So it's like the more I suffer, the more haggard I feel, the more tired I am, the more, you know, the more spit up on me on my clothes. Like, people would look at it and be like, wow, that is a mom.
Yeah,
what a mother.
I know.
She's really, really working. But at the end of the day, right, to whose detriment, your mental health would just be deteriorating. You could get depressed. I was depressed for a couple of years after I had my kids because I just did not know how to get out of that. So when I hear like a younger mom come to that realization so early. I am so happy because your experience is going to be so much better for it when you're able to actually take a break and take some time to figure out what it is you want to do and what makes you happy. So I am living. Yes.
Thank you.
On the trip. Have fun. We can't wait. Data's page is amazing. Her page on Instagram is The D-Lo.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that's where she puts all of her content that she creates around motherhood and her family, which is so beautiful.
Thank you.
I'm going to turn on my post notifications.
Thank you.
Because I cannot miss this trip's and this trip's content and everything you're going to be sharing.
Oh yeah, we're ready.
Please, you're going to give us like the full thing.
We're ready from beginning to end.
We are here for you. So I'm going to be ready. So thank you and have fun. It's going to be awesome.
Thank you.
So I wanted to start off with your pregnancy.
Okay.
Because like you had mentioned just a few moments ago, you were pregnant in the height of the pandemic. And I think things are a bit better now, even though, of course, we're still very much in the pandemic. But then, like you had mentioned as well, like even just watching the news, everyone was so scared. Like at a point we felt like, oh, if someone just breathes on you, or in fact, if someone with COVID walked past, the particles could be hanging in the air. And then if you now walk, if you enter the same kind of airspace, then you'll catch it and then you'll end up in ICU because everyone who gets COVID ends up in ICU and dies. And that must have been such a stressful time, especially being pregnant when you already have all these anxieties and worries. Yeah. So that must have been hell.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask how your pregnancy in actuality differed from what you had in mind what your pregnancy journey would look like.
Oh my goodness. So many different ways, because you see a lot on social media with pregnant women and they're always glowing. And, you know, even the people that do share their honest version of their pregnancy, there's some things that you it doesn't occur to say to people. So for me, my mental picture was like, you know, you just get bigger and you glow. And, you know, the first part of my pregnancy was actually not that bad when I was in Nigeria. Then I ended up in hospital, like I was bleeding a bit and I was on bed rest for a while. So that itself was very scary, because I was released from hospital on Christmas Eve. So it was my first Christmas with my husband, and I was released from hospital Christmas Eve, and we had friends coming around on Christmas Day. So I didn't want anybody to know I was on bed rest. I was trying to like stay as still as possible. And even being on bed rest in itself is so like, you feel like you're in prison, because you're scared that like any little thing that you'll do will affect your baby. And I remember my dad called me at one point, and you know, I think my husband had reported me to him that I was just up and down the place. And my dad was like, look, that, you know, if you do anything, they'll say that it was because of you, that, you know, if anything happens to the baby, they'll just be like, that, see this one that cannot stay in one place, you know, she did something and her baby, you know, lost the baby. So I was really, really scared at that point. Then traveling to America and with the pandemic and everything, it was crazy. At some point, my mental health was definitely affected by the whole thing, because first of all, I knew very late into my pregnancy that my husband was not going to be able to make it for the birth. And I think I had this picture in my mind of like my husband holding my hand. I'd watched so many YouTube videos. I had the way that I wanted my birth plan to be. And, you know, my husband will be there. I don't know how active he would have been. I guess maybe I'll see with another baby. But I expected him to be there holding my hand, you know, wiping sweat off my brow.
The ice chips.
Exactly.
You know, like whispering in your ear.
Do you know what
all
I mean?
That,
giving me foot massages and whatever. But, you know, just knowing that he wasn't going to be there in itself was really depressing for me. And I definitely was in a dark place at that time, because my aunt died at the same time. And I just used to wake up every day and just feel numb. And I kind of felt guilty about that, because people would tell me that my emotions will affect the baby. You have to be happy for the baby and everything. And everything was all about this baby. But I was like, I'm not happy. This isn't what I planned. This isn't what I wanted. Like, this is completely different from what I had envisioned for my birth plan and my pregnancy. So for a while, I was really in a dark place, until I spoke to someone who basically just told me that, look, you have to find your happiness and your joy in this thing and your mental strength. Just because giving birth it's mental, you know, it's very, very mental. No matter how much you plan your birth plan, you don't actually know what's going to happen. happen. From when you have that first contraction, you don't know how it's going to go. So she told me, she was like, listen, you need to actually, you know, be strong mentally to do this. And I know that you feel sad, but just for this period, just try and find joy in anything. So for me, it was mainly music. Like, I used to just listen to music a lot and just, you know, just dance around and just, you know, just try and make myself happy on a daily basis and plan a lot of stuff for the baby. So I would go clothes shopping, buy the baby's clothes, you know, just try and figure out the kind of mom I wanted to be and how I wanted to, you know, be with my baby. So for me, yeah, it completely, my plan went flipped upside down. But at the end of the day, like, I just had to work with it. And I think the minute that you see that baby, you kind of like, well, not everybody feels that way, but I felt a connection and I was like, do you know what? I'm going to make this work. Her dad isn't there, but I'm just going to, you know, make the best of the situation.
That is like, that must have been, I can't even imagine that much of a deviation in your birth plan, because yes, you kind of know I have to be flexible, but then to be doing it in a pandemic, to do it without your husband being there, and all of the anxieties that come with that must have been crazy. And I love that you mentioned that you didn't even feel like you were really allowed to be anxious or really allowed to be sad.
Yeah.
Because like, yeah, you know, well, it, you know, affects the baby, which is true. But at the same time, like, I'm not just a vessel. I'm actually a person who's actually going through real things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that we stifle women when they're pregnant and don't really allow them experience like the full range of their emotions. So I don't really know what the way forward is with that, but I know that conversations help, and being able to speak to people who will let you know, like, it's actually okay to be sad, and you can have a moment to be sad, but then you need to kind of work through it, not just for yourself, but of course for the baby.
Yeah.
So I love that you said that, because it is difficult. And you know, in pregnancy, people expect you to just be happy all the time because, you know, you're giving birth. It's a miracle. And it is. And, you know, all life comes from God. It is a miracle to get pregnant. It's a testimony and it's a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also very, very hard.
Sure.
And that's one of the reasons why I love speaking with women. And I started the podcast so we can talk about these things, because it's so hard. And, it, you know, sometimes you just need to feel like you're not allowed to express these emotions because, you know, you're a vessel and you're bringing forth life, which is great, but it's hard. And then I'm so glad that you had a friend who was able to tell you that you needed to try and find joy and try and find a way to be okay, because it's one thing to be sad about it, but you also need to be able to bring yourself out of it.
Sure.
And I love that you said music. Music was such a big thing for me. I didn't deal with any prenatal depression, I think, but postpartum depression was a big thing for me. And one of the things that really, really helped me was music. I used to listen to a lot of music just by myself.
It's helpful. Kind of
it's so
therapeutic.
I agree.
So good. Dancing, you know, just listening to even worship music helps me as well, because I was able to let out my upset and let out my emotions in private, and I cried a lot and then I picked myself out of it. But if I wasn't allowed to have that time to cry, it would have been a lot harder to deal with. Yeah,
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And then at what point did you start feeling better? Like, by the time it was time for the birth, were you in a much better mental place, or were you still kind of on the brink?
So basically, I think by the time it was time for the birth, I was definitely in a better mental place. And another thing that I forgot to mention that helped me a lot is having like a close circle of friends. So two of my friends were pregnant at the same time, and we had a little WhatsApp group, and we used to just have honest conversations, which is why I love what you're doing here. We need, as women, to actually start opening up and being honest about certain things, just so that, you know, someone coming after you actually, you know, doesn't have to go through the exact same things that you went through.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I remember when my baby was born, and I feel so bad admitting this, but I'm going to admit it. When my baby was born, I actually thought that she was really weird looking, and I couldn't tell anybody. I mentioned it to my mom, like, I hinted. I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting her to look like this. I was like, do you think that she's going to, like, blossom, you know. And my mom was just like, she's so beautiful. What are you talking about? So I was just like, okay, I can't, you know, say this.
Exactly.
Like, this is bad. But then in my little WhatsApp group, you know, I told my friends, I was like, look, man, this baby, I don't know. Like, you know, I know that I'm not ugly and my husband's not ugly. So what's going on? Is she always going to look like this? And they too also had the same experience. In fact, one of them, her child was beautiful from birth. But the other one, like, she had the same experience and she was like, ah, you know, I hope that these kids blossom. And lo and behold, they did. But, you know, it gave us that kind of safe space to just be open and honest about the things that we're feeling, even the things that, you know, you're not necessarily meant to say as a mother, because really we're human beings and, you know, we're women aside from, you know, mothers, we're human beings. So, you know, I think having open conversations really helped me. So I was also able to tell those friends how I genuinely felt and they supported me through it, which, you know, really, really helped me a lot. Like, just to be able to be like, oh my God, this sucks. This is not what I planned. You know, they were also able to speak life into me, which was really helpful. And I know that not everybody has that liberty and freedom because no one wants to be judged or, you know, to be looked at as ungrateful, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think that's another thing that people do these days. Yes, we do realize that, you know, having children is a privilege and not everybody can have kids. In fact, in our generation, it seems like, you know, there's even more difficulties now, you know, more than ever. But then, you know, as well as being grateful, you can also be upset sometimes and you can also like question certain things. It doesn't mean that you're not happy that you're having a child. It just, you know, we're human at the end of the day. So I think we need to just like allow ourselves to be that, like give ourselves grace to just, you know, keep it real sometimes.
Listen, I can't even, like, Datari is just spitting pure facts. Like, I am just sitting here even trying to learn and really, like, listen. So this is incredible. I completely agree with everything you said. And I also want to co-sign, newborns can be weird looking.
They look weird.
They can. I said it. And it is what it is. You know, when Marobi, my son, was born, I don't know. I think it was maybe kind of the way he went through like the birth canal because his head was like I was looking back at a picture someone sent me of when she was carrying him when he was 4 days old. And I was like, wow. And I remember being like, and with all three of my kids, I'm like,
okay. Like there's that minute when you see them and you're like,
okay, let's see, you know, and then people are like, oh, send me pictures. And you're like, oh, so you're not trying to find the best angle.
I know, right?
So you're not trying to angle. I used to angle the camera like this and the baby would kind of, I'm like, hey, but we're not seeing the face. I'm like, hey, you're not seeing the face. It's strange, but I mean, obviously it's hard to, I've never had a conversation with someone before.
I don't admit this to anybody because I'm sure people will still even judge me, but it is what it is.
Newborns, they be weird looking.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's fine because they fill out and they're
and blossom
and their faces start like taking on their real shape. Mm-hmm. And then ahead, that's why you'll be seeing, that's the thing. If you go and check your fave mom influencers and all these people that share their baby pictures, is from like a suite.
I'm telling you, they don't share they will never those that, ugly that alien.
Exactly. So that's why you just see like the foot.
Mm-hmm. Or they'll have the baby in the carrier and it's just the back of the baby
exactly.
You're seeing.
And they're
I know.
Forming privacy, but they know.
That baby don't look good yet.
Not yet. But the baby's time is coming.
Yeah.
Wow, thank you so much for that. Like, I've been in my
for 8 years.
Is it
not a relief to just say it? To just literally say it because,
oh
man,
listen,
baby.
It's hard. Oh, wow. Thank you. Wow, you have blessed me today. So you had the baby and then at what point, because you had mentioned that your husband wasn't able to be there for the birth, at what point was the dad and your husband able to meet the baby?
The baby.
Yeah.
So she was actually 6 months when he met her, which is wild if you think about it. Like, so many things had happened in between that time. I think she was already crawling or about to crawl at that time. So she had gone through so many different phases. And literally now, if you bring out a phone in front of my daughter, like, she knows how to pose automatically because she was so used to video calling her dad. So
wow.
We were just always, like, we had a Zoom and WhatsApp video call, you know, 6 months with my baby. Mm-hmm. So when she was 6 months, he came and he was able to meet her. And yeah, it took her a while to even adjust to the fact that, you know, this dynamic of there being two people now, they're completely inseparable. But it was a bit of an adjustment at first, even for her, because, you know, pandemic babies, and anybody that had their baby in the pandemic will relate. Like, you literally have to make excuses for them everywhere. Like, you go places, they don't want anybody to touch them, come near them, you know, even other kids. So, you know, we're always apologizing. Whenever I see another mom that had her baby in the pandemic, I'm like, you get it, right? You have mm-hmm. to just be like, she's a little bit unfriendly.
Yeah, she's
like,
not.
She's like,
yeah,
people.
She's not. They're just not used to people.
No, they didn't have that experience at home.
And it's not even just with newborns. I think that a lot of children, and I'm hoping that it's a topic that I get to explore some more, but I found that so many children, if not every child, has been impacted negatively by this 1 year or 1 year and some change mm-hmm. of a lack of social interaction.
Yeah.
Because as adults, we're already fully formed for the most part. And it's been hard for adults, but children who are still trying to figure this whole thing out are now dealing with so much anxiety, are lacking in like certain social skills because they haven't had the chance to be around people for such a long period of time. And a year is a long time for a four-year-old to not be around people. And then you're now suddenly thrust back into school. Mm-hmm. I remember when my kids were starting school, they started school much later, actually, because Marobi is asthmatic. So we wanted to make sure that it would be safe for him to go back to school. And I was talking to them the day before, like, oh, you know, you guys would be so excited. Because I thought maybe they'd be bouncing off the walls. Like, yeah, we can't wait to go back to school. And, you know, they were kind of, okay, even though the whole week they had been crying about how they're tired of online school and they're ready for school. But when the time came,
they were a bit like,
And I'm like, oh, you know, but what's wrong? And it's like, yeah, you know, but what if, like, what if my friends don't like me anymore? Or, you know, if my friends are not coming to school, and then a couple of classmates had moved, and it's just so, it's too much. So they were going to school and they were scared.
It's a lot.
And even that week, it was now just trying to adjust to being around people and figuring out where you are in like the social like hierarchy and like all of that. It's a lot. I have friends whose kids have become extremely anxious during the pandemic because, you know, we don't know when we have the TV on and these kids are just seeing, you know, like CNN, you just seen body counts. You see the numbers, 1 million, 3 mm-hmm, million, mm-hmm. 100 dead. You see the people outside the beds, outside the hospitals, because the ICU is full. And kids have been taking all of that information in.
Yeah.
So they're nervous, and there's a regression I found. And I want to, it's something I would like to explore more. But yeah, I completely agree with you. I can imagine what it's like for newborns, but just so you know, it's not even just them. Like, now kids don't even, well, all these kids are still trying to figure it out. And it's so crazy and so intense.
Imagine. It sounds really, really crazy.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
a lot of their learning actually comes from even watching their peers,
exactly.
right? And their interactions with their peers. So I can imagine it must be really difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a while for everyone to recover from the pandemic, even though it's over now. I think definitely it affected all of us.
Mm-hmm. I know. Okay. So as someone who, so you were in America for how long before you came back?
Back to Lagos.
Yes, back to Lagos.
About a year and 3 months. So just over a year.
And as someone who has parented now in the abroad, in the US of A, and has parented or is currently parenting in Lagos, what would you say some of like the key differences are in your mothering style, if there's any difference, or if there's any difference, or what the differences are?
There are so many. In fact, it is like literally like night and day. Parenting abroad and parenting in Nigeria, it's completely different. First of all, I wish my husband could have been stuck with me in that pandemic abroad, because I think that dads abroad are so much more hands-on than dads in Lagos or mm-hmm. in Nigeria in general. Moms too, but dads especially. Like, I find that abroad dads, they know a lot about their kids. You know, they do a lot of stuff because a lot of people can't afford to have like nannies nannies and, you know, different house helps and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So definitely that is one of the things that the dynamic is different, because even in Nigeria, like my nannies, I have two nannies, which is another thing that I'll talk about, because it was a little bit, I don't know, controversial when people found out, like my relatives found out that I had two nannies. One of my aunties even was like, you know, complaining to my dad about it, that, you know, why do I have two nannies for one child? But I'll tell you my reason after when I go to my Lagos parenting experience. But abroad, you know, it was just me, my mom, we were stuck in a pandemic, we had no other help, and my brothers. My brothers now are like, literally, they're like nannies, like they know everything because really and truly abroad, everybody has to get stuck in. Mm-hmm. So it is a way more hands-on experience. It is, you know, sometimes a lot more stressful because you don't choose, you can't choose to just kind of like switch off and not, you know, do certain things. Like, you know, you actually have to do it because you don't have staff to help you out. I think also abroad as well, there's a lot more things to engage your children. So you can always, you know, take them out, distract them, you know, take them to the park. Although we weren't going out that much in the pandemic, I felt like she was more engaged in America than over here. And just basically, I mean, in terms of like feeling tired and worn out as a mom, definitely when I was abroad, I used to feel tired all the time because it was mainly I was the main caretaker for my daughter and my mom as well. So in between us, like taking shifts and stuff, I just felt like really worn out sometimes, mm-hmm. because, you know, you literally have to do every single thing yourself for the baby. However, on the flip side, I felt like I had a deeper connection with my daughter when I was in America because I knew everything about her. I know where her stuff is. I'm the one that changes her diaper, you know, baths her, everything. Now, in Lagos, my first experience, so my first week in Lagos when I first had a nanny, so this was like a nanny for a one-year-old. My daughter was one when we came back.
Right.
Like, my first week, I was like, oh my God, if I actually decided to do nothing for this baby at all, not change her, not feed her, like everything is done for me. I think in Nigeria, you actually get to enjoy your kids more. Because they're just presented to you.
Like, yep. They're clean, they're fed. And it's so, like, oh, here you go.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So what you are doing is maybe focusing more on developmental stuff, mm-hmm. that maybe your house helps and nannies and stuff may not, you know, be able to do as well as you. And really just enjoying playing, and you're happy, you're less stressed out. So, you know, my first week I was like, oh my gosh, is this a dream? I would wake up and my nanny also, she's like, she's just the best with Tiara. Like, she's really good at dressing her, so she knows how to match her bow, match her shoe, okay. You know, I didn't even have to tell her like this goes with this, like she just comes correct. So in the morning she's presented to me and then I pick and choose, you know, it sounds so bad, but like I pick and choose, you know, how much time I spend with her and, you know, when mm-hmm. I spend time with her and mm-hmm. what I do with her. Now, I found that in Lagos, I have to be a lot more intentional with my parenting because, like I said, if I choose to never see my baby and, you know, let my nannies just look after her, then, you know, I don't have to do anything because they actually look after her very well and everything is done for me. But, you know, I don't want to have that experience. I want to have a relationship with my daughter. I want to do stuff. I want to know where her stuff is. So I have to really be intentional and make sure that I'm always checking, always, you know, checkmating them as well. So they know that I'm interested in what's going on with her. So they don't, like, you know, do rubbish, basically. My first week with my nanny actually burnt my daughter with an iron, which was also a very interesting experience because, you know, I had to decide whether to just let her go because I was like, how? I mean, it was an accident, you know, but when it first happened, she pretended like she didn't know, you know, what it was. She didn't know what the burn was. She was like, oh, she thought it was a rash and everything.
Oh, no.
It was crazy. I was like, for me, like, if you do something, own up to it, hold your hands up. If you lie, then bye, like you're gone. Like, mm-hmm. hell no. Like, I wasn't going to have her stay. But then when I had experiences and, you know, talking to other people about their experiences as well, you know, I think sometimes it's better the devil you know. If the person is good in all other aspects,
amen,
and, you know, you're able to kind of like train them, explain. And one thing that my husband explained to me at the time, he was like, look, there's some people that if she came and was like, yeah, you know, the iron accidentally burnt your daughter, you know, there's some people that would just go crazy, call the police, get them locked up. And then, you know, that's why they actually, their first instinct is to lie. So he was like, look, just sit her down later when everything is calm, talk to her and just explain to her that, look, you don't like lying, that if she is honest with you, there will always be a place for her in this house, and, you know, you will always be receptive and try and be understanding if she is honest. But mm-hmm. the minute that she lies, you know, that's it. Like, if she does it again, she's gone. So that was one of the things that also made me know that I had to be more intentional, like, in with my parenting in Lagos. You have to actually watch the people that are watching your child as well. So I installed CCTV cameras and stuff, and that really helped me a lot. But yeah, it's completely different. Completely different.
Like, I love that you said, you spoke about the child just being presented to you, right? because like you said, that's how it be.
Yeah.
That's how it be. Yep. If you have good nannies. There's some people who have like horrendous nannies, and you find that you're paying people and then you still have to do all the work.
Right.
But if things work as they should, then it really takes the load off for you to focus on other things. Like you said, like the developmental aspect, their spiritual lives, mm-hmm. their education, their extracurricular and things like that, and their character.
Sure.
And that's also really important. But it's also more important to be intentional about making sure that you do get that time in, because it's really easy to get a bit lazy. And I'm talking to myself here as well, to just kind of, oh, well, you know, they'll be okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, before, like when my kids were much younger, and because I had my first and second so close to each other, it was like having twins. So sometimes I'll actually avoid them because I'm like, I know if they see me, going to want to follow me. So I was just like, I'll hear them playing. I'm like, okay, are they okay? Let me just go to my room. So I'll just moonwalk back into my room so they don't see me and look for me. I love having help. I
me
love
too.
That. Because I feel like it makes me more productive. It makes me better. And I feel like when I'm rested and happier, then everyone gets the best version
that's
of Nicole
it.
There
that
is. Like, I can still, you know, have time to work out. I can still dress up. I can look cute. I can go out with my friends. So I'm happy. I'm mm-hmm. not like snarky. So I love help. But kudos to the moms abroad who are doing it, killing it. They're working. They're hands-on.
Man.
They're going out for dinner with their friends. Like, I don't know how they're doing it. They
amazing. They need a Nobel Peace Prize.
They do. Each of them. They are queen. They're like, I don't know.
Honestly,
I don't know if I'm...
Honestly.
I
would have left Nigeria if it wasn't for the help. But, like, I can't imagine doing that whole looking after my kid completely by myself right now at this particular stage in my life. Like, I'm loving the help. And I love the fact that you mentioned about looking good, because when I was, you know, in America, to be fair, I wasn't dressing up that much. I wasn't taking care of myself as much. And
right.
I was actually losing my confidence, you know, from just letting myself go. So in Nigeria, because I have that help, you know, I'm able to spend a little bit more time looking after myself, putting on some makeup, brushing my hair, you know. And it actually really made me so much more of a better person, a better mom as well, because I'm happy. I feel good, you know, when I look good, you know, or when I at least look presentable, because you can't be switched on every day. But at
Amen.
Least when I, you know, can look a little bit presentable, it really, really helps me, helps my confidence, and makes me a better datari for everybody in my household. So,
love it. So my next question was going to be about, I mean, I know you trained as a lawyer. How did you, I don't know if, do you still practice law, or how did you kind of transition into this content creation space, navigating millennial motherhood?
So basically, it was kind of out of circumstance, to be completely honest with you. So I'm no longer practicing law actively. I'm actually in a completely different field, which led, you know, it kind of, I I found myself through motherhood and found myself in this new field. So I work as a digital strategist at the moment for a tech company. And that literally came about. In fact, one of the things that they asked me about in my interview was my YouTube channel, which was crazy.
Wow.
And yeah, they were like that, you know, that they've seen that I create content. So, you know, that will help me from the content creator side, you know, because they're like a tech company. They work, it's a B2B business. So they work with other businesses.
Okay.
But they were like, when you actually create content yourself, you know what you are expecting when you're putting it out or what you're trying to achieve. So mm-hmm. it gives you a really holistic perspective on the whole content creation thing. Now, why I started creating content, to be completely honest, was because, first of all, I just felt that there wasn't enough honesty out there. I know that authenticity is really hot at the moment, but it's really hot. Everybody's like, yes, yeah, share. And I actually love it because, especially in Nigerian society, there's just so much secrecy and there's so much kind of like, you know, playing to the gallery and acting like everything is cool. You've got it all together. And I was like, no, because I personally have learned so much from other people's experiences, which is why I share mine. Every time I do, I literally cringe. I'm like, oh my God, you're taking one for the team, because it's not easy. And, you know, all of the content creators also need like a round of applause, because it is actually not easy bearing your life and sharing intimate details about yourself, you know, to people that you don't know. But it is also so helpful. It is such a powerful tool. It's actually one of the most powerful tools for women empowerment, I think, because
I agree.
Yeah, because we can actually share information, share experiences that you don't feel like, you know, you're failing as a mother or as a wife or as a woman, because you're like, okay, this person went through this and, you know, they got through it, or this is how they dealt with this experience, you know. So that's one of the reasons that I got into content creation. And then also, when I was in America, I remember when I first started creating content, a brand reached out to me and they wanted to send me some products and they wanted to pay me to post about them. And I was like, huh? At this time, I had like maybe like 2000 followers on Instagram. I just considered myself, you know, someone that was just having fun and, you know, sharing my story. But then I also realized, which is another thing that I think that, you know, women can also use as a powerful tool for empowerment, that you can actually make a lot of money online. And, you know, mm-hmm. you can actually have it as a legitimate source of income. So, you know, from that, I started doing it. And then, you know, working with different brands, it enabled me to kind of make some money whilst I was in America, because I couldn't come back to Nigeria because of the pandemic. I didn't have a job. I had quit in January 2020, and then the pandemic hit in March. So my plan was to come back to Nigeria and get a job. But since I didn't have a job and I was newly married, I didn't want to put so much pressure on my husband. I mean, converting Naira to dollars, it ain't easy.
No,
it's not for the faint-hearted. Mm-hmm. So I just decided that I would try and actually, you know, monetize, you know, whatever small influence I had online, and, you know, try and have that as a little side hustle to take pressure off my husband. So those are the two main reasons: authenticity, and also, I mean, I don't want to come here and pretend that I don't enjoy being paid to create content as mm-hmm, well, although mm-hmm. I love doing it I would do it for free anyway, but when you're able to monetize it a little bit, it helps.
Like, I agree.
It helps. Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that you touched on authenticity, because it's really, like you said, it's something that's been kind of floating around for some time. But I think that it was mostly in like the Western part of the world.
Yeah.
It really took a while for it to kind of filter down to Africa, down to Nigeria in particular, where appearances are everything.
Yeah.
And it's so discouraging, because when I started on my motherhood journey, this was 8 years ago, there was nothing like that on like social media.
Yeah.
So when I had any questions, or I was feeling sad or depressed, or I needed someone to talk to. And then I also got married quite early.
Yeah.
And I had my
did.
Yeah. I was, girl.
Looking back, you were like a child bride.
I was. Like, I was 24. Like,
wow.
It was wild. So no, I didn't really have any friends who were married or had kids around that time. So I would, of course, go online, but then online, these are all white women. So
yeah.
While I could relate to some of the things, I felt like it would have been so beneficial to me to see and hear from someone who looked like me and who was going through my exact experiences, who was being told to eat pap for their breast milk, you know, things like that. Like,
exactly.
It was, or whether I should give my child, you know, that local bath, you know, when they stretch you and all of those things.
That thing is scary.
It's scary. Did you do it?
Yeah.
Oh,
my mom did it.
Your mom
but
did
I couldn't
it?
Watch all of it. No, I watched like a second and then I was like, no. Like, why are you bending? Like, you're going to break her arm
exactly.
off.
Exactly. No, I couldn't watch that. I couldn't. I think one of my nannies, I think my mom did it for Marobi. But my point is, I was lost because I didn't have anyone. So I love seeing more and more moms like yourself who are authentic. And I love that when you're saying you're authentic, that's how he really means it. Like, it's not like a filtered authenticity where it's like, oh, I'm such a mess. Like, you're wearing, you know, like you're wearing like a three-piece suit. And you're like, oh, you know, like, I'm such a mess today. I only made three things for dinner instead of five for the family. You know, all of that stuff. Like, she's really being authentic. So I really, really love and appreciate your page. And
thank
I love that you're
you.
Getting paid for it. There's nothing I love to hear more than a mom getting paid.
Thank
better get
you.
Your coins. Better get your dollars.
Thank you.
I love to see it.
Thank you. But then there's another aspect as well. So at a point I had to, so I started off on YouTube and then kind of blended both YouTube and Instagram.
Yeah.
And at a point I had to stop my YouTube channel, you know, temporarily, which I am starting back again very soon.
Great.
But one of the reasons that I stopped it, and I think this is another element that holds people back from sharing on social media, was at that time my daughter ended up, so she had what, I don't know the medical term for it, but basically she had like a flat head kind of syndrome thing.
Okay.
Like, her head was flat on one side. I think from the way that I was putting her to lie down and just generally, just, I mean, it happens to some kids.
Yeah.
So she had to wear a helmet for about 2 months, 3 months, no, almost 4 months she had to wear a helmet.
Okay.
Yeah. So when it happened at first, you know, one of the things that older people were telling me, I guess aunties and things like that, is like, you're putting your life out there, you know, you're opening yourself up to like attacks or people, you know, bad mind people, like juju, all of that kind of stuff. There's nothing that I didn't hear. And for a while it held me back. And I was kind of like in this place of fear that, you know, let me not put my daughter out there. So what I would do, any pictures that I did put of my daughter during that period, I would quickly take off her helmet, put one turban on her head. Like, everyone knows my daughter for turbans.
Yes.
But they don't fully know the reason why she was wearing turbans all the time, because, you know, I had to shave her hair completely off to do the surgery and everything. So
wow, she had to have surgery.
Yeah, so it's like a molding kind of surgery. Mm-hmm, so they mold the head back to its original shape. So they have to hold one side and then the other side is free to kind of like grow to whatever shape they want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So this happened over a period of 4 months, which, you know, ordinarily I would have wanted to share. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of people that may go through that kind of situation or other kind of medical situations with their children. But then from an African perspective, you know, anything that happens, you now think, hey, it's because I'm talking about my business.
Mm-hmm. It's my enemies.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I only just came to the realization, I guess also because I'm a Christian, that, you know what? No, like, if God actually leads you to do something, to share, then God will guide you and protect you. This was probably going to happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily just because I opened up or I was sharing my daughter's picture, because I know especially with the older generation, they warn you about, you know, putting your children's pictures on social media. And I think if you're a private person, fine, have your privacy. But if you do feel like sharing and you're held back because of, you know, let somebody not see my beautiful child and, you know, I don't know, their bad energy or their juju or whatever, like, I just think that, no, like, we should just be liberated and free. I only just recently came to this realization that, you know what, no, at the end of the day, you don't know, like, the feedback that I get from people, it just reassures me that you don't even know when you're sharing who you are sharing for. You're just there saying all of these things, even like the most basic things, like even you with your blog and your skincare tips and things like that, you don't know how many people have had their confidence regained, or when you share things about your kids, you know, you don't know how many people, especially because like you're married to a celebrity and you're a celebrity yourself, just seeing that human aspect of you, you know, so many people are liberated by that. So definitely it's been an interesting journey with this whole content thing, but
wow. So I had no idea regarding Tiara and her.
I didn't tell anybody.
That is wild.
Yeah,
I'm glad that I mean, it was always a minor thing. So I'm glad that everything, you know, kind of worked out.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you're sharing that because I didn't even know about that. I know someone who had a daughter who was always in a helmet.
Yeah.
But I wasn't quite sure what
why.
Yeah. And I didn't want to ask. So mm-hmm. I just, it's one of those things I think about and I, you know, I'm like, well, you know, it's not really my business.
Yeah.
But I had no idea. So that's really informative. Yeah. So for moms out there, you know, you're not alone if you're going through it.
That's right. Because it's the guilt element of mm-hmm. it because, you know, it is part, it could partially be caused from the way that the baby sleeps. And, you know, I was what my mom calls a Google mom. I used to live by Google.
Same.
So, yeah, do you know what I mean? So they say, you know, don't lie your baby down on their tummy. You know, just keep them on their back is best. I even had this, like, wrap thing that my daughter used to wear. And on the front of it, it says back is best.
Yes.
So I was like, always put her down on her back. But because she slept very well, I mean, my daughter slept through the night from 2 months. Like, she was literally, like, a sleeper. So all that pressure on her head actually attributed to what happened. So I also went through that guilt of, oh my God, did I do this? Did I cause this? Was I not, like, you know, I didn't even know. It was the doctor that told me that, look, her head is misshapen. And even with having the helmet surgery, like, I didn't want her to do it just because I didn't want to shave off her head and for people to see her in a helmet. So I ended up prolonging it. She was meant to do it at 3 months. She did it at 6 months, you know, when my husband first came. And I didn't want to do it because I was kind of like embarrassed, you know. And to be honest, I delayed and delayed and delayed. And then I took the decision that, look, I want to do what's best for my child at the end of the day. Let her do that, even if I have to shave off all her hair and, you know, whatever anybody has to say. So it was a bit of a, it took a while for me to also come to that decision to do it because I was just scared of what people would think, like seeing my daughter in a helmet. And even me, when I saw her for the first time, I was like, oh my God, like my little baby with this helmet. But, you know, it was what's best for her. Mm-hmm. So it worked out well in the end and she's good now. So
thank God she is. And thank you so much for sharing that. My next question, I mean, the name of the podcast is Mom's Worst Day, but I can imagine that period would have been...
Worst. Very, very, very worst part of my motherhood journey so far. Because also as well, because I was creating content, I didn't know how much to share. And I think I also had to come to the realization that even though I want to always be authentic, I don't have to share things when I am going through them.
Right.
I want to always share from a place of empowerment, not from a place of, oh my God, look at me, my child is wearing a helmet, blah, blah, blah. So like now I feel like I'm over it. You know, I mentally, I feel ready to share about it, which is why I'm able to share it here. I've not shared it on my social platforms yet, but you know, I just feel like I'm in a better place and I'm able to share it now. At that time, I wasn't in a good place because it was depressing. It was mm-hmm. sad. It mm-hmm. was, you know, I felt guilty. I felt like, you know, why me? Like, why is it like my baby? You know,
exactly
that kind of thing. So it was definitely the worst period. I think that and when my daughter had jaundice, because that was another thing that I blamed myself for. Because
I don't know why.
So I didn't know that jaundice was something that happens to babies ordinarily.
Yeah.
And then when I got to her first doctor's appointment and they told me that she has jaundice, they were like, "Will you feed?" I was bang like dead on breastfeeding by fire, by force. Even when there was like only droplets of milk coming out, I was like, no, I'm a breastfeeding mother. Because, you know, everybody just sees like, you know, breastfeeding is best for your babies, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And actually, you were one of the people that I spoke to that was like, will you give that baby some formula? Like, she was literally starving. And I was so hell-bent on being a breastfeeding mother. Mm-hmm. And I think after I spoke to her, I started to give her formula and she started to actually put on weight and get better.
Amen.
So, yeah.
What is the best thing about being a mom to you?
I just think for me, the fact that my daughter just loves me regardless. Like, you know, other people, adults and children are so different in that regard. Like with my husband, like I can probably do something and, you know, tomorrow he'll be looking at me with side eye. Mm-hmm. But with my daughter, like, I just love the fact that I'm just so amazing to her. Like, she just makes me feel so good. No matter how bad I am as a mother, if I'm having a bad day, a good day, like, she just loves me regardless. And she's so sweet and, you know, loving and caring. So I love that element. And just, you know, yeah, just the fact that she loves me that way, and just the fact that I'm able to, you know, kind of shape another human being, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. I love creating impact. So I love giving back and that kind of a thing. So just the fact that I'm able to, you know, do things like even praying with her, even, you know, teaching her little things, music, you know, the movies that we watched that I watched when I was a little kid, like her favorite show is,
awesome.
Yeah, like her favorite show is Blue's Clues. And I used to love Blue's Clues.
Me too.
Oh my God.
I loved Blue's Clues.
Yes, but there's a new guy now.
Yes,
though.
I know. The Asian one.
Yes, exactly.
No, I'm up to date. And it's so sad. I was literally watching Blue's Clues even up until I was like 13. I was watching Blue's Clues because Blue's Clues was lit.
It was lit.
Yeah.
So yeah, just getting to share that with her and everything. I think that's the best part of motherhood for me, definitely.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. So we're almost at the end. Aww. Usually at the end of the podcast, I'll share. I'm big, big, big on affirmations.
Ooh.
Because I found that saying certain things to myself has rewired the way that I see myself,
yeah.
and kind of guides my thoughts for the day. So I try and find an affirmation every day regarding different aspects of my life, including motherhood. And I just, you know, think on it and I say it to myself. And today's affirmation is, not loving every moment of motherhood does not mean I don't love being a mom.
I love that. I love that. That is so true.
As you hear that, like, what are you getting? What is that saying to you? Not loving every moment of motherhood does not mean I don't love being a mom.
Oh, it is like literally that resonates with me so much, because at times, sometimes, especially like, for example, with my own personal experience, I got pregnant a month after getting married. So I got thrown into the wife kind of duty and then thrown into motherhood pretty quickly. So sometimes, like, I even have times when I'm like, oh my God, should I have had a child so soon?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm still trying to figure out like being a wife and balancing that whole dynamic. So, you know, just because I have those thoughts sometimes, it doesn't mean that I don't love my daughter, or, you know, I don't love being a mom. I think the fact that not every element is going to be amazing and fantastic, that even some things that, you know, are very, you know, there's a bit of like, I don't know, kind of like a boring element, right, to motherhood,
yes.
and a bit
yes.
of mundane kind of like, you know, element as well.
Yes.
So I think people also don't talk about that so much. So just because those things exist, and just because sometimes you don't always feel, you know, great about it, doesn't necessarily mean that fundamentally you don't love it, because it's you know, such a rewarding experience. And I think part of those bad, you know, moments, those things that are difficult, the things that challenge you, that is what, you know, comes together to make the experience so rewarding. Because it's like, I've had a sleepless night, but my baby is, you know, everything to me. Like, I feel terrible. I don't feel like doing anything today, but I just saw my daughter's smile and it has lifted me up. So it's all about balance, yin and yang. And yeah, I think that's what the affirmation means to me. And I love it. I need to write it down.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, please. I love it. It's really, really so true. I'm sure so many moms can relate to that.
Yes, I think so too. Wow, what a powerful way to end this conversation. Datari, thank you so, so, so much for coming in and sharing so candidly and openly and so eloquently about your journey so far.
Thank you.
And I'm sure that so many first-time moms and so many new moms will be able to take so much from this conversation.
Thank you.
So please, 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 for more information, for more amazing motherhood content, lifestyle content, because Data is just, she's an incredible woman. So just being able to follow her on socials, like, I look forward to her posts.
Thank you.
Make sure you follow her at The D-Lo.
Thank you.
And then we should also look out for your YouTube channel, which should be coming back soon.
Yeah, so next month I should be back with video content.
Awesome.
And yeah.
Awesome. So thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so honored. This has been so much fun.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it too. And you are amazing. You're like the baddest mama jama at the moment out there.
Oh.
you know, I love your page, love your content, you know, love the fact that you're fun with motherhood, because it doesn't always have to be so serious, right?
Yeah,
so,
I agree. Thank you. And thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.